Welcome back to Business Resolutions with your host, Jorge Gonzalez.
Well, welcome back to Business Resolutions, and my guest today is Dr. Jose Raul Montes Pagan. And we are talking about how you finally determined to go into medicine and then eventually into your specialty. So you were at Cornell, and what's the big, apparently there wasn't a big moment, aha moment. It kind of it was kind of gradual. It sounds like, right?
No, actually, I knew that I wanted to become a doctor. Just, you know, as I told you before, I liked sciences a lot. I liked people, to be honest with you. And also, you know what? Back then, as I told you, I knew that I could probably do whatever I wanted because I had so many interests. But I wanted to be myself. I wanted to make myself sure that when I was done with a long career, I was able to find a good job. Mm-hmm. And I knew, and I'm totally honest, I knew that that could happen in the medical field. And we all know that that's how it works, right? Even nowadays. So I left Cornell and I came back to Puerto Rico, to the University of Puerto Rico, to the medical school. And at the medical school, I have the most amazing experience because every year I would change the specialty. I start my career thinking that only because I love kids, children, and I get along with them, I was going to be the best pediatrician. And then I rotate in pediatrics, and then I realize, no, this is not the situation in which I can relate to the kids. And it's more dealing with the parents and with the kids. So I switch.
Okay.
And then I said, well, let's wait till the third year in which we get into every single system of the body to see which one I liked. And then I had amazing professors in every field, specifically in gastrointestinal diseases. So I said, well, I think I could be a great gastro doctor. So I went and I did training at Memorial Hospital. They allow me at the school to go to Memorial Hospital for a few months and do a gastro rotation. And then they put me in a ward with only one type of specific conditions. I remember it was a porphyria patients, and I said, no, I don't think this is for me.
Right.
So I changed back. And then I said, you know, let's wait to my professors what they think about my performance in every single rotation. And then I went to speak with every single director of department to see the way they evaluate my performance and my attitude, what they think would be a good feel for me. And they would say, every single one, they'll say, you should be in my field.
In my field.
You're
thanks
great.
Thanks a lot.
even at the psychiatry department, they say, you will be the most amazing psychiatrist. Come to our department. Uh-huh. And I said, well, let me think about it. But you know what happened? I had my uncle back then, which was my only contact with the medical field, was a dentist, Dr. Hector Pomales, and his best friend, his tennis player partner, was Dr. Jose Berrocal. And I was once with them, and Dr. Pomales, my uncle, said to Dr. Berrocal, my nephew, Jose Raul, is kind of undecided to what field he should get into, and Dr. Jose Berrocal, that's not possible. He has to be in ophthalmology. There's no other choice. And then I went to see Dr. Berrocal, to his office. I went to the operating room, and I just fell in love with the field.
Okay.
And so I can certainly say that my uncle and Dr. Pomales and Dr. Berrocal were actually the one who shaped my mind into the field that I adore, in which I work right now.
And I know, and within, of course, these conferences, there's a number of areas that you've been specialized, but one of them is the Botox area. You know, tell us your development within the Botox and that specialty, and what people look to you in terms of, you know, your experiences that are special, that are unique.
Well, I like that question because I'm not exaggerating if I said to you that Botox changed my life, changed my practice. And I like to explain you why. When I came back to Puerto Rico after my fellowship training in Cincinnati and coming from Mercy Life Hospital in London, in which I was doing orbital diseases, my idea was to return to the university system as a promise to Dr. William Townsend, who helped me get into my fellowship. And I returned, I'm still at the university. And when I came, I was dealing with orbital surgery, trauma, cancer reconstruction, all kind of pathology dealing with my area of specialty. One of the areas of my subspecialties are disorders of movement, or what we call spasm,
right.
Blepharospasm. Blepharo means eyelids. Spasm is an involuntary movement, or a dystonia, which is an involuntary movement of some muscles in your body. And back then, we were dealing with a lot of patients, a big patient population, suffering from this disorder called blepharospasm or hemifacial spasm, in which they involuntarily move their eyes in such a way that sometimes they are incapable of dealing with their daily lives because their eyes are closed shut.
Right.
So in 1989,
is it both eyes or sometimes just one
sometimes
eye?
Sometimes it's just one eye.
Sometimes it's both.
In a lot of patients, when it's called blepharospasm, is the two eyes. When
okay.
it's called AMI, which is half, AMI facial spasm, is one eye.
Okay.
Two different etiologies or causes. In 1989, when I was graduating from medical school, the FDA approved Botox for the treatment of blepharospasm and strabism, which is the deviation of the eyes. So we are talking that in 1989, we had for the first time a medication that was approved to deal with this disorder, incapacitating disorder, for this cohort of patients.
Right.
The Botox is basically a medication that you inject over the muscle. And it's like you have to think of Botox as a muscle relaxant.
Right.
Okay? And if you think that in 1989 it was approved for that reason, by coincidence, 10, 15 years later, a couple of doctors from Vancouver, Doctors Alastair and Jean Caruthers, she was an oculoplastic surgeon, he was a dermatologist. And the oculoplastic surgeon, Dr. Jean Caruther, said, you know what? Most of these patients that I've been treating with Botox for this type of movement disorders, they don't get wrinkles in the face. So this medication relaxes the muscles. Mm-hmm. And one of the side effects is that the patients, they don't develop wrinkles. So she said, let's do something with this medication. Why we don't inject our staff just for cosmetic reasons to see how it works? And they did it. They did it on their staff and their secretaries on the glabellar area, which is the area between the eyebrows, in which people usually when they frown, they form lines. And they realized that after the injections, people were not able to frown. The lines disappeared or improved considerably, and they wrote a paper. So the company said, wow, this is a tremendous indication for this medication.
It goes way beyond disorder, it goes
to
aesthetics.
Yes. Like many other medications, you know, it's by chance that you discover another benefit or advantage. So in 2002, FDA granted the approval for Botox for cosmetic reasons. And since then, 2002, Botox became the number one cosmetic procedure in the world for men, women, and still today it is, because it's such a precise and predictable medication when a capable physician or surgeon is doing the treatment.
Okay, well, let's take a break and we'll how you change. Obviously you did it and how you changed and how you become a world authority in this area. So I'm with Dr. Jose Raul Montes, and we'll be right back after this break.